This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is podcast 112. It's just gone 6 p.m. in the UK. And I'm here with my two co-hosts, Henry Viola Hare at HT Viola and Alex De Groot at De Groot Media. And we're here with you again 2 weeks on from the other shenanigans and all the other issues that have been going on around the world. But we're going to try and focus this one in on investing, because we know lots of people have had some difficulties regarding markets, profit warnings left, right and center, stocks getting hammered, markets not doing as they should be doing because of all the distractions that's going on in the world. So I'm going to start this podcast by asking Alex just a little synopsis of what's happened with you externally in the past 2 weeks. Yeah. I'm going to go to Henry to get a little update on his. I know he's been traveling a little bit, so we'll hear a bit about that maybe. Alex, what about yourself, mate? What's been happening?
Well, Monday morning, 9:45, I did a little bit of telly, which I was quite proud about. I was invited onto CNBC
by our old friend.
I know, the wonderful Jim Anna, who I've known off and on for a number of years. And they asked me to do an interview on Disney, because Disney is celebrating its 100th anniversary, Mickey Mouse. And it's a company in the States, Walt Disney, which is really underperforming, because its theme parks are doing really well, but its media division is not doing so well. And the media division is not doing so well because basically people are saying, as the streaming bubble burst, how are you going to make any money out of streaming, i.e. Disney Plus? And are you going to sell ESPN? And ESPN is probably known by most sports fans, but in the US, it's absolutely massive. So I was asked to have a chat about Disney, and so that was good fun, and something I've not done for a little while. Apart from that, kids are getting geared up for half term, which invariably means looking for things to do and films to go and see. So if anybody's got any tips, send them my way. And apart from that, I just noticed that it's getting darker in the evenings, guys. So clocks will change shortly, I believe. And so we're heading into those winter months. As far as the market's concerned, it's exactly as you say, Pete. I mean, we're getting warnings every day. But the flip side is we're getting takeover bids every day. This morning we had Kinnan Carter. It's a company I know quite well. It used to be called St. Ives, for those with long memories. And they got an approach by Apax, private equity group, which will almost inevitably see them being taken out in the low 100s. This is a name that was trading at £3 two or three years ago. So we've got this weird situation at the moment in the UK where if you're not getting taken over, you're having a massive warning. And for investors, it's a nightmare. It's tricky times. So tough times, I think. And you can get one right and then you can get one wrong. And it does feel as though, from an interest rate perspective, higher for longer is where we're at. And generally, that isn't necessarily that helpful to share investors, to equity investors. So that's an overview of what I've been up to and what I've been seeing.
Thank you for that, mate. Congrats on the appearance on the TV. Good to see you back on there. You have to send us a link to that so we can share that on social media when it's available. If it's recorded and there's a little clip there somewhere, we can share that. I think I'm probably going to ask you a few more questions a bit later on about Disney, because it's something that's intrigued me and something that it's a stock that everyone's always, well, I've been saying for at least in the last 12 months, it's undervalued now, it's time to buy. It's undervalued now, it's time to buy. And it's not had that catalyst. And I get the CEO's name again at the top of my head, but him returning was meant to be a catalyst, and it's not happened yet. So I'll talk to you a bit more about that maybe later on. Henry, Mr. Super and Duper dressed dapper man with your tie on again. We had a bet, right? Or we've got a promise that we're going to dress up one week on this podcast, Alex and I, and we're going to outdress you, right? So anyone that's not on YouTube, you used to go on YouTube and you're going to see two random people not dressed so well. And then once again, Henry's topped and tailed. All right, go on. What's been happening,
mate? Very kind, Peter. I'd just like to echo your thoughts and congratulate Alex on the TV appearance. I mean, what a great way to start the week. Really, I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on Disney. Very well done. I've had a bit of time away. I've been up in Edinburgh for a week with my wife celebrating our anniversary. We had a really nice time. At least I did. I think Verity did. She didn't complain, so I'm going to take that one as a win. And yeah, back at work this week. Been a bit of a rocky week, to be honest, on the markets. You know, I still feel like we're chopping and changing. I noticed in the headlines today, Goldman Sachs has had a huge profit slump, 33% in the last quarter. They've made a big misstep going into consumer banking. For those that aren't aware, Goldman Sachs was traditionally this big US investment bank. And a couple of years ago, they decided they wanted to get into the retail side of things. You know, credit cards and retail bank accounts and so on. And they've made a complete dog's dinner of it. And their property portfolio, I think they've just written down their commercial property book by 50%, running up over 200 million in losses, which is quite astonishing for one of those names that traditionally everybody saw as the pinnacle of success in the investing world. So that did catch my eye. Other than that, in the UK, I noticed that inflation has stayed steady at 6.6, was it 6.7? It's not dropped any further, which isn't great. And so perhaps that's pointing to further interest rate rises, which, frankly, I think most of us could do without right now. But that's me.
Absolutely. I've got to agree with you there with regards to the markets. And what triggered it today, I think, was those numbers coming out as still being sticky. And I think the problem there is that, you know, I forget which month it was then when Rishi first came out with that comment, we will get this back down to 2%. And I was like, don't make promises you can't keep. And I'll get it down by the end of the year. It's October now. We're at 6.7. Hasn't managed to get it down, you know, even half of the direction from where it was before. Getting it down to 2, maybe this time next year he'll get it down to 2, but I can't see him doing it before December. So yeah, it's not great for stocks. And as Alex pointed out earlier, more and more profit warnings. But I think we have to celebrate first and foremost, Henry, the fact that Verity's put up with you for another year. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, congratulations. And Verity, thank you. If you're listening, he has to make it to at least 3, because that's where things start to get rocky. And then you get to 7, you've done well. Yeah. So, yeah, well done there. I'm clapping Verity, by the way, folks, if you can see me on the YouTube now. So bravo. Congratulations, Henry. Right.
Thank you very much.
We're going to go back to Alex. I know you weren't meant to be talking about this stock, but it intrigues me because every young boy and girl that I know that's sub 7 wants to go to Euro Disney, wants to go to Disney, wants to go to, you know, Disney in America and blah, 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 blah. But that's not the whole of the pie regarding Disney. It's a massive business, right? It's got lots of different arms to it. But it just seems to have struggled for so long, and it's always meant to have been stronger and more profitable. And it just seems to have stagnated, like they've missed a few open goals. What's actually going on? And what did you share on your TV appearance, Alex, that you can share with us to educate us about what's going on at Disney, please?
Well, the fellow you were referring to was Bob Iger. He's the CEO. Yep. He's the fellow that left and has now come back, Bob Iger. Yep. And they're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the company. The stock price is about $85. It's one of the weaker performing TMT companies in the States this year. By the way, I mean, for those that don't know it, I mean, this is a blooming big company, $150 billion, with 40 odd billion of debt. So Walt Disney is a big old company, but it has struggled. And the reason it's struggled is because of the debt and because they've been losing shed loads on their streaming business. And probably a lot of our listeners will have Disney Plus. They may get it through Sky Q or they may just subscribe to the app, but they'll have Disney Plus. And don't forget, they were the guys that first showed The Mandalorian. So they've got quality content. Problem is, they bet the barn on this business. And we now know, coming out of COVID 2021, 2022, that a lot of these streaming businesses peaked during COVID, thinking of Netflix, of course. And so Disney's bet, which was well intentioned, ultimately has left them strapped for cash. And so fast forward 18 months, and funnily enough, the theme parks business, which is predominantly in the US, but as you say, they have parks in Europe and rest of the world, that's doing pretty well. That's profitable. Volumes of visitors are up. The numbers are pretty good there. But the core media business is struggling and the margins are declining. And of course, the macro this year isn't great, so some of the advertising isn't great. So you've basically got a situation where a very well-known activist shareholder called Nelson Peltz, very well known in the States, has taken, I think, a 3% stake in the company, and is going to take more, I'm sure, and is going to ask for a board seat, and he's going to try and shake things up. So from a share price perspective, we quite like that because we like activists generally, because whilst they may not always have the interests at heart of all stakeholders, they're generally investing because they want to drive the valuation. We don't know what this fella Peltz wants. We don't know how he's going to get there, but we do know that there's some agitation taking place. I personally think Disney will probably be broken up over a period of time, and you'll end up having a media business. And you'll end up having a parks business, theme parks business. The media business is absolutely massive. They're one of the biggest studios in the world, as I think we all know. Everybody probably knows that they produce Avatar and lots of other top franchises. They own the Marvel franchise or studio. They own the Pixar studio. So they've got lots of iconic brands, but they've not managed to create what you might call is a sort of successful overall business. So the reason I was invited on CNBC was predominantly to say, well, what's going to happen? What's going to happen here? What does this tell us about how people are watching media at the moment? And we've got Netflix numbers later this week. That's the big daddy of the streaming world, as we all know. Probably a lot of us on this call have got Netflix. But the truth is, a lot of these streamers are struggling to drive prices. They've got big volumes now. They've got hundreds of millions of viewers. But they're struggling to get people to pay more in terms of their subscription. So that's the sort of background. But the catalyst here is that this fellow Nelson Peltz has come on board as a shareholder because he believes Disney is undervalued and frankly undermanaged. So I can't sort of state clearly enough, in the States, Disney is an absolutely massive company. I mean, we know it over here, but in the US, it really is massive. And so, if anything were to happen to Disney in terms of breakup, it would be headline news. It may be not going to happen in the next few weeks, but I think it's coming, down the pathway. So, that was the reason for talking about it. And of course, the big thing, Pete and Henry, is the big thing is, if we have a recession in the US, if we have a hard landing, will people stop spending on the Netflix subscriptions? Will people stop spending on Amazon Prime? Will people stop spending on Disney Plus? And I think the jury's out whether or not we're going to have an, have a recession in the US, but it's a big call for people to make because, rates are staying higher for longer. Inflation is a reality, and some of the jobs data is just declining a little bit. So it tells us, I think, a lot about how consumers are feeling as well. So that's Disney in a nutshell. I couldn't honestly recommend on today's pod that people rush out and buy some shares, but they should be aware that there are changes potentially afoot.
Yeah, I think the important thing you've touched on there, amongst all the other bits that you shared, was the importance of the problem they've got regarding the debt side of it. The streaming obviously is the catalyst. You've touched on the fact that they've bet the house on streaming, and it's not quite worked out for them as yet, and may have peaked, as you say, back in lockdown. But Henry would be all over that and say, if it was any other company than Disney with £40 billion of debt, stay well clear of it. Buy a t-shirt instead, buy a Disney t-shirt, don't buy the stock. You know what I mean? But it goes to the argument again about looking a bit deeper and looking at all the bits and pieces within it, and looking at the sum of parts and the intrinsic value, and is that far more than the under 50 billion market cap it is today? And if so, is it 200? Is it 250? Is it nearer to 300? And therefore, then that 40 billion of debt looks less of a worry, but it's still a sizable debt. And is anybody having the conversation out there saying that that 40 billion debt could actually cripple them? Because somebody else could say, you know what, we want to buy that unit, we want to buy that unit, and before you know it, it's just broken up into 12 different entities, not just two component parts.
What investors need to look at with Disney and with any company is floating versus fixed rate coupons. So, in other words, of that 40 billion, how much is tied to current interest rates, which are what, getting on for 5% now, versus we've been used to almost a decade of 0 to 1% interest rates, and how much is fixed at a lower coupon? And if you've got a company in your portfolio that's got lots of debt, how much is it spending on interest? I've seen profit in the UK. I mean, the company that springs to mind is Strix Kettle, where the interest payments have gone through the roof in the last 6 to 9 months. The debt hasn't actually changed, but the coupon's gone through the roof. And when they're renegotiating the facilities with the banks, I'm afraid the banks have got the whip hand at the moment. The lenders have got the whip hand. So Disney, in a way, is a sort of parable or a sort of highlights the bigger picture here. Please, Mr. Investor, be aware if your share, if your company has a lot of debt. If it does, can it afford to pay it? Because if it can't, it might cut the dividend or it might cut the capex. It cuts the capex, the growth might come under pressure. So there's a wider story here, as you say.
Absolutely. And we've seen a few stocks come out and say, we're going to cut the dividend, and the dividend investment has gone out the door, and the share price has gone wallop, and crashed accordingly. Henry, any thoughts about Disney? Have you been? Have you ever took Verity to Disneyland? I'm
We've never
joking.
been to Disneyland. There are two things I do know about it. One is that they're struggling to put up prices in the parks. If you've ever been to a Disneyland experience, they are astronomically expensive. So over here, to go on holiday, you go on a general package holiday. Let's say you spend, I don't know, maybe £500 per person for a cheap holiday abroad. Disneyland, you could stick a zero on the end of that quite easily. It is absolutely astronomical. And the prices over the last couple of years have gone up and up and up and up and up to the point where consumers will not pay anymore. And so the parks historically have done very, very well. They're hugely profitable because once you've built the thing, you've only got the maintenance costs. The other thing that occurs to me about streaming services generally is that with terrestrial media entertainment, you used to have a model where you would broadcast one program at a time. So if you turn your TV on and you put on BBC One, you've got the one program that they're broadcasting. If you don't like it, you don't watch it. With streaming services, the entire catalogue of every show they've ever made is instantly available anytime you want it from anywhere in the world on as many devices as you like. And I've never understood how on earth that can possibly be profitable. Because although you can only watch one at a time, they have to have them all stored, queued, and ready to broadcast at any time in HD quality as well, which is fairly expensive to store and transmit. And so to me, that streaming model, whether it's Disney Plus or Netflix or whoever, it's got some big question marks over it for me about how you can ever afford to make it profitable. It's not a field I know an awful lot about, but that is a thought for me.
Fair
No, you make a
points, fair
very good
points.
point. And let's not forget, guys, even Netflix and Disney are up against a very deep-pocketed competitor in Amazon, who arguably can wear the losses associated with streaming, for a lot longer than they can. So it's an intensely competitive space. I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in the streaming space. My anecdote on streaming is that basically, as a house, we sort of use two or three streamers: Netflix, Disney Plus, and Prime. Nothing else really gets a look in. And to be honest, the kids have no affinity with any media brands other than TikTok and YouTube. I don't know if that's the same for you, Pete, but a lot of
Pretty
what
much.
we see, the traditional media brands, don't resonate with people under 18.
I completely agree with you. Now, I want to move on now to the markets. We touched on the fact that inflation was sticky. And on top of that, we had some negative news from the builders, where I was yesterday and today. So I'm going to touch on the builders a bit later on. But the FTSE got whacked as a consequence of the builders and inflation remaining sticky. We're sitting at today at 7,588. FTSE closed down 1.14%. FTSE All Share 1.18% negative today. Still above 4,000. Finished at 4,088 FTSE All Share. Mentioned a while back that the risk of the FTSE AIM going below 700. It's sitting at 684.8 now. And if it doesn't sort itself out quickly, we're going to be going towards 650 potentially regarding that. I'm going to talk about another one of their stocks that's been whacked recently, not helping them in a sense of a quite sizable sort of AIM stock. I'm going to talk about one of those a bit later on. But it seems to me that the market's just keeps going up towards, or the FTSE 100 at least, keeps going up towards 6,000. Sorry, 7,700-ish. And then it gets around there, and then a little bit of news comes and it wobbles back down. So we're trapped in a little range of 7,700 plus and 7,400. We're trying to hold on to that range, and everyone's hoping and praying we're going to get a rally, but I'm not sure where that rally is going to come from and what's going to trigger that between now and the next 8 weeks or so before we're into 2024. Is there anything that you guys are seeing that you think actually that could be a positive for the markets going forward, and that could help people out? Because I'm hearing, I'm seeing on the Twitter, and other, or sorry, X, heaven forbid, lots of noise and carnage of people saying I'm leaving, I'm out, I'm done, I'm going into passives, I'm going into tracker. Trackers is the only way forward. I'm buying bonds that are giving me 6% and 7%. I'm going to cash, all cash, you know. Any thoughts, gents?
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
I mean, I'll kick off just quickly. I mean, AIM to me feels, it feels, I mean, it feels, as I said earlier, you've got this paradox where you're getting bids every day which come in at a 30%, 40% premium. And yet you've got companies delisting sometimes without even offering shareholders a bid or an offer on the way out. And you get AIM below 700 now. Very little new, very few new entrants to AIM. CAB payments hasn't really worked out as an IPO.
Mm-hmm.
So I see this paradox where the oil price and the dollar earners maybe take the FTSE 100 higher. The oil price and the dollar earners, the big stuff. But anything outside of that, unless you're going to get bid for, it's tricky. And there's no real money coming into the UK market. Money's leaving the UK market. So I'm a natural optimist, but I think we've got a few issues to work our way through. Although paradoxically, oil, let's be honest, given what's going on in the Middle East, the oil price could be a one-way bet right now. And that will probably help some of our massive companies. So I think FTSE maybe goes higher, but AIM, I'm struggling to find a flaw on AIM, even though we're getting all these bids, and even though the valuation must be very low. The UK definitely, it needs to get its act together. I mean, we've really got ourselves into a pickle. Hopefully they were near the bottom.
Cheers, thanks for that. Henry, any thoughts?
Yeah, I'd echo that, to be honest. I mean, As regards moving into trackers, I have kind of had this impression for a while that trackers may not necessarily be the safest place you can be. I'm not sure that picking individual shares is the safest place to be, but I feel like we're in more of a stock picker's market at the moment than we are in an index market. Simply because indexes, as money comes out of the market, the indexes will just fall indiscriminately. There's nothing you can do about it. It will just deflate. Whereas if you pick the right companies and you're getting them at the right price, and you've got to be very, very careful about when you're buying them. But I think there's quite a few bargains out there kicking around. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you're not going to see a 10% share decline after you purchase something, maybe 15%. Because money is getting pulled out of the market, like Alex says. And yet, over time, I think there's some value to be had at the smaller end of the market. There's value to be had at all ends of the market, to be honest. But for people that are feeling discouraged about their investing at the moment, I think try to take a longer term view of what you're investing in and why. We've had 10 years of quantitative easing. So markets have just gone up indiscriminately, and we've now got quantitative tightening, and they're going down indiscriminately. Doesn't mean you can't be successful as an investor in either market. It's just a little bit more difficult at the moment. Well, taking my own experience, it's a lot more difficult at the moment, but that doesn't mean that you should give up.
Absolutely agree. Great points there. I think it's interesting that, I've always said on here, and I've said it openly on Twitter, that you should judge somebody, if you're going to judge anybody, not on 1 year of what they've done in, regarding their stocks, individual stocks, or even their portfolios. And in fact, don't judge anybody, just focus on your own portfolio. But if you're going to analyze anything, analyze your return, or total returns, if you want to go that far. On how your portfolio has done over 3, 5, and 10 years, but never on in a space of 12 months, because markets can be absolutely horrible. And I think, we've had a lot of people who've sought safety in dividend plays, in REITs, in stocks that play chunky dividends, and it's not worked out this year because the share price has fallen far beyond the return of the dividends. But there's going to come a point, as Henry said, where some of these stocks that are quality stocks are going to be bid for, or they're going to find a catalyst. And going forward, I think it's going to be interesting as to whether or not we get any budget sort of noise in next month, Alex, budgetary from, the various individuals that are going to be telling us what to do with our money and our savings, Jeremy Hunt and Rishi Sunak sort of thing, and that could be a catalyst, unless they go and attack, how much we can put in an ISA and, inheritance tax and tax relief and so all those sort of things. So if they come out with something positive to help the market and ensure that people, maybe even to the nth degree of saying, some of your ISA has got to be put into UK listed companies, which I've heard of extreme reports about that sort of conversation, maybe that could help UK stocks and even AIM. I don't know, but I think they're wanting to shake things up a little bit, the UK government. So we'll see if there's a catalyst there. I'm going to talk now very briefly about the Twin Peaks Challenge winners for September. I want to get this in the middle section, and then we're going to talk about stocks that Alex has picked and Henry's picked, and a couple of ideas that I've got. But Henry's crunched these numbers, and I trust him dearly with these numbers because he just does a brilliant job on it. But some of the returns for the month of September, I was when he sent them to over to me, I was scratching my head going, "What?" And it's crazy. The numbers here, I think, have largely been lifted by one particular stock, and that particular stock in question is Oxford Biodynamics, which during September soared from around 11 pence to nearer to 33 pence. Yeah. So not 100% up, 200% up, tripled in price. So I'm going to do this in, if I got this in reverse order, I've got the names of the other people. I have, right. So in reverse order, we've got one individual that's got a Twitter handle by Equity Invest Me Too. This is third place, folks, right, for September. And that individual's portfolio was up 25%. Yes, Alex, look up. 25% in September. I'm like, what? and that only managed third place, folks, right? Second place was Martin One for September, up 39%, right, for the month of September. And this is the beauty of having it set the competition up as we had before. Share prices fall, they have a good month, they pop, you've got an opportunity of winning from out of nowhere. But the winner of the September Twin Peaks Investing Challenge was none other than at Do It For The Twins, with an astonishing, this is Henry's words as well as mine, 54% return for the five stocks that, I know it's a he, selected for the month of September. Portfolio consisted of Destiny Pharma, which is a ticker symbol DEST, Knights Group, which is a ticker symbol KGH, Atlantic Lithium, ticker symbol ALL, Sylvania Platinum, SLP, and of course, Oxford Biodynamics, which took the portfolio to an absolutely screaming high. And what was the news there? They basically got the sign off for launching a 95% accurate prostate screening blood test for men regarding prostate cancer. So in the UK and in the US, the share price has gone even higher. I think it was as high as nearly 50p. I think it's gone back down to about mid 35s, so on and so forth now. But that's what's going on with the portfolio. So congratulations to Do It For The Twins. And please get in touch with us within the next week or so, and we'll sort out your prize, which will be a month subscription to Share Scope and one of the 15 books from Harriman House. So you're in the running, really, to win the whole competition as well. But Henry's done the numbers as well, because we've only got the month of October, November and December left. Crunch the numbers as well for the overall leaders of the whole competition. And these are remarkable numbers as well. Thus far, to the end of September, at Smudge Dan is in first place with a return year to date of 70%. So congratulations there, Dan. You are leading the way for the full ensemble of going down to Powder Monkey Brewery in Gosport, having a full day out, designing your own beers, and eventually getting 200 cans sent to you as to where you reside in the new year. Followed by at jam4u_75 with 59%. And Jarvie55 with 49%. You three are the overall winners of the competition so far. Henry's gone a bit further and a bit deeper. I am currently sitting in 18th position with a 15% year-to-date return. Henry's in 26th position with 6%. Wheelie's down in 70th position with a minus 10% return. And at the bottom of the pack, we've got quite a few names. One competitor has lost 58% year-to-date, and nearly 160 competitors we have on board from the 160. 117, which is more than half, obviously, have lost money on their portfolio year to date. So that's how hard and difficult the markets have been. You've got one extreme where someone's got 70% return year to date, and the other extreme, you've got someone losing 58% year to date. Extremes. Henry, thank you ever so much for crunching those numbers, mate. And congratulations to all those that have participated and doing well. There's still time. You know, Smudge Dan could have a difficult 2 or 3 months and be out of the running, and someone else could win it overall. So we'll keep you posted. And if you do have a stock in your portfolio that's been taken over or changed its name or changed its ticker, send a little note to me and Henry on X, Twitter, please, folks. Right, I'm going to go to Alex. You've already covered Disney a little bit. Can you give us one stock, please, sir, regarding what you've been looking at, something interesting that others can go away and research?
Well, our dear friend Wheelie flagged this today. A bit of director's buying at Keyword Studios, KWS. For those that don't know, it's what you might call a sort of big mid-cap, market cap, just over a bill now, I think. Based in Dublin, floated on AIM 10 years ago. And what they do, Keyword Studios, they do the sort of back office for basically the video games industry. Now, I think it's fair to say that the video games industry has not exactly covered itself in glory over the last 12 months or so. Anybody that's been a shareholder in Frontier Developments, Bidstack, Tinybuild, Devolver has lost a lot of money. So that is the context. But what I would say is that Keywood acts for the big Electronic Arts of this world, Activision, now owned by Microsoft. And basically, what they do is they do consulting and support services for the big games producers. If you've got a smash hit game and you want to roll it out in Eastern Europe, but you don't have the in-house translation capabilities to do that, to roll it out in Poland, they will do it for you because they operate on a multi-local basis with the big games companies, taking the product and turning it into saleable product in local markets. That simplifies a little bit of what they do. It's called localization. Think of them basically as a support services company for the gaming sector. And the reason why I'm looking at it is because basically the shares are down at 13 quid. You've got some directors buying, which I always take as a bit of a steer personally. And you've now had resolution of the Microsoft Activision deal in the last 2 weeks. The CMA finally gave it the go ahead. So that deal now completes. That means we've got this gigantic gaming company. And I can tell you that probably within Microsoft and Activision, there will have been a bit of a freeze on budgets until that deal was approved. Now, KWS will work with these guys, and Microsoft Activision coming together will force the hand of Sony. Sony will have to step up to the plate competitively. Obviously, we're talking about Xbox versus PlayStation here. And so, really, the gaming sector's had a tough 12 months, but Keywood Studios is like a sort of annuity on the whole industry. And if the industry picks up again and goes again, I think you can see this price probably back into the high teens, 17, 18 quid. When I covered the name 3 or 4 years ago in detail, it was trading in the mid 20s, like 23, £24. And it's what in the jargon, what we know as a compounder. In other words, the revenues just compound year in, year out, plus 3%, plus 4%, plus 5%. Always at a stable margin, very low risk. They don't make the games themselves, so they don't have any of the creative risk. They are just a support service providing additional capacity for games companies globally. So companies not really put a foot wrong, but it has been derated. But I think on the back of the Microsoft Activision deal getting resolved, the whole industry will begin to unlock. I think it's frozen and locked, and I think it will begin to unlock. Cloud gaming is still a thing, it's still real. 5G is still going to happen. And I like good quality names which get sold down to relatively low multiples. Probably trading on about 12 times PE now, about the same as the FTSE All Share. But it used to trade on 20, 22 times. So what's changed? Well, the market's a bit crapper and the games industry's had a tough 12 months. So I was going to talk about it anyway, but then Whaley tweeted about the directors buying sort of triggered something in my mind. So KWS, decent sized company, good liquidity, based in Dublin, but great clients. That would be a name I would flag. It used to be a growth stock, it's been derated back to a market rating. Why can't it re-rate again? That's my mid cap for today, Pete.
No,
KWS.
it's a good one. I like that. I love the fact you've touched on the catalyst being the clearance for the merger between Microsoft and Activision, because that's been dragging on for nearly 18 months. And the UK said no, then it went to Europe and they said yes. It's just, and now it's freed up, like you say, could unlock a few budgets there, definitely. So that's very interesting. And like you say, it's one of those that most of the FinTwit have liked, if not held at some point or other. Some of those that have given up on it might be seeing an opportunity to buy it back cheaper than they sold it of late. Is it something you've looked at in the past, Henry?
I know the name. I wasn't aware that it was support services rather than games development. I may have had a conversation with someone on X jokes about it in my DMs at some point, who possibly pointed that out. But that's a really interesting angle because I'm quite averse to consumer cyclicals, and actually something that supports a diverse range of consumer cyclicals is a bit more defensive to my mind. So that's a really interesting angle on it.
I think
Yeah, I
the
think that
interesting
is a
thing as
key
well
point.
about that.
Key
So I was
point
about to say, Alex, that one of the interesting things that you touched on, the most important thing is that, and Henry's just backed it up again, is the fact it's not a gaming stock. It's the support side of it. I think a lot of the people that haven't researched it historically have seen it as another gaming stock and have
That's it.
tarnished it. And it's the reason why the price has probably come so far down
Yeah.
alongside the same sort of depreciation as the gaming stocks when it's not actually a gaming stock.
Well, let's be honest, if you've owned Tiny Builds, you've lost 90% of your money. And so I can well imagine some holders of KWS have thought, too risky. Key thing, they do not make the games. They are not creative. They supply ancillary functions around localization and the back end, the unsexy bit of the video games industry, which needs to be done to get a game to market. So yeah, it's sort of de-risked. So I think it's good to go again. I was quite encouraged actually. FDev Frontier Development had a trading update 2 or 3 days ago, based in Cambridge, company that's very dear to my heart. Had a nightmare 18 months, lost people a lot of money, but for once there was no warning, and the stock did rally 10, 20%, I think, on the day.
Yeah.
So maybe we should sort of say that the profit warnings there have also stopped. But yeah, KWS amongst the mid caps.
Thank you very much. Okay, now we're going to go to our suited and booted young man, Henry Viola Hare, for his first pick of the day. Go wherever you want in the world, mate. Let's hear it.
Well, my first pick is one of the world's largest independent owners of container ships. It was established in 1972. And if you can't guess, it's a company called Danaos Corporation. It's listed on the New York Stock Exchange with the ticker DAC. It's a £1 billion holding company, an international owner of container ships. They charter their vessels to a range of liner companies and have approximately 50-ish vessels in their fleet. The company is paying a dividend of 4.5%, covered 8 times from earnings, so nice safe dividend there. It's been buying back shares since 2021, and they've got a current program of about $100 million worth of capital, which they're about 65% of the way through spending to buy back shares. They generate a nice, healthy 20% return on capital. And as regards their debt, they are net debt about $130 million from my research, which gives them a net debt to EBITDA ratio of about 0.18 times, with 44 of their vessels having no debt attached to them. They have a very strong forward-looking pipeline of orders. So they've contracted charter coverage for 2023 at about 99% booked up for this year, and 86% for next year. So although they are showing a little bit of a drop-off, as one might expect, as global trade slows down a little, still looking fairly healthy, and I think they'll be able to continue servicing their debt. The reason I've had my eye on them, I'm quite a fan of buying fairly defensive assets at cheap prices if you can. As compared to things like consumer cyclicals, defensive type companies are used throughout the entire business cycle. So when the economy is going gangbusters, people use them. When the economy slowed down a bit, people use them. And a shipping business is one of those industries which I think is always going to be in demand in some way, shape, or form. And this is one of the global leaders in the sector. And I think you've got an opportunity to buy a very strong, very well-established leader in the market at quite a competitive price at the moment. So that might be one that you want to go and take a look at. Not saying it won't get cheaper over the next 12 months if inflation doesn't come down or the economy slows down further, but possibly one to add to the watch list.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, You know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEETS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Interesting. Another interesting one, not one I've looked at before, Henry, again. I was going to ask you about the actual space that they're in, and in the US, where are they? Are the top tier of the shipping companies, or middle, or
near the bottom? Yeah, no, they are one of the largest.
We're talking about scale here. A billion pound companies could be tiddler over in the US. What are your thoughts about it?
In terms of £1 billion, it's not that large. I mean, if you compare it to something like Disney,
I'm just asking about within their own sector. I mean, in the shipping
within
side
their sector, they're one of the larger ones.
Right, one of the larger ones. Okay. Cool. That's good to know.
So you're not buying someone with one fishing boat and an upturned table.
I heard the number that you said. But the beauty of it is that if they have got some capacity financial wise, anyone that's struggling in the sector, they can buy. They won't be one of the acquirers. Are you with me? They'll be one of the acquirers, not one of the ones that are being bought.
Yeah.
So that's what I was thinking. I'm going to talk about here one of the leaders of another sector here that's had a bit of a kicking since September. And we're a nation of pet lovers. CVS Group got absolutely spanked back in September. Basically, talked about CMA again. Basically came out, Competition and Markets Authority came out and said they're going to investigate, launch a review on the veterinary services over concerns of pricing and pet owners being charged too much. And CVS is one of the larger operators in the UK with 500 practices, 2,250 vets-ish, thereabouts. And the number of independent vets in the UK has gone from around 90% being independent in 2013 down to sub 45% now. And basically people are saying, look, we're getting ripped off. So the government had decided, triggered CMA, to go and do a voluntary investigation into this. What happened? September the 7th, CVS shares went from plus £21, walloped down to sub 14, I think they hit at one stage, sub 15, I think, and is sitting there now around 15-ish. Came out with a full year revenues in September, about 2 or 3 weeks later. I think it was 2 weeks later. Revenues were up 9.8% to 608 million full year. Profit before tax increased 49.7%. Net borrowing, I don't know if you're going to ask about it, Henry, an increase by 105% due to acquisitions they'd made from the previous year, but it was only 74 million. And this is quite a large entity regarding the size and scale of it. But it's an AIM company. This is one of the problems. So you've got 1.07 billion market cap company on AIM. And it's another destructor of the FTSE AIM All Share Index, because it's halved. Yeah. So it's gone from being a £22 per share-ish sort of share, going all the way down to 13. And then it's currently sitting at around 15. So I just think it's a really interesting price. I think the interesting thing will be what the government come back with this investigation. If they come back and say, it is what it is, or we want you to make certain sort of incremental sort of changes, I think once that's settled, share price goes back again. Because the whole 360 of the vet side of it, the membership side of it, the vet side of it, the prescription of medicine sort of thing, they've got it all locked down. Even the crematorium for pets, they've got it all locked down. So I think sitting at its lows at the moment, that could be a very interesting play. All caveated around how harsh do the comeback, do the CMA come back with and impact them and Pets at Home. If they come back and it's a light touch brush, the share price takes off. I think it'd be an interesting play for somebody to investigate. I've got my eye on it. It's one I'm going to be looking at. If this drags on a bit longer and longer and longer, that would maybe give me a sense that the CMA are really, really going for it. If nothing comes back, then I think the share price takes off. But at some point, I'm going to start probably nibbling or scaling into CVS at this current low price. Anybody looked at those sort of pet stocks?
Do we know when the CMA might come back or when we might get an update on that?
You're talking about the CMA, mate. Started in September. We're just in October. So on the 7th, that was a month ago.
Yeah.
I would guesstimate 3 months, maybe they'd come back and say something.
Okay.
Depending on their preoccupation with other things. There's not that much going on, really, for the CMA to be dealing with competitions. There's not much takeovers in the UK at the moment, or UK stocks being taken over by overseas stocks. So maybe they haven't got a lot going on. I don't know. They could be back before Crimbo, mate. And if they come back before Christmas and say something light, great. If they come back and go, wallop, we think you've got too much of a large share of the market, it could be a £12, £10 stock.
Yeah.
Risk reward.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, we are a nation of pet lovers. And so therefore, businesses which service that demand are in a growing market. But it does sound like there's a little bit of regulatory risk. But hopefully that
Absolutely that. Especially when they came out in September and said, oh, by the way, our profits had increased by 49.7%. You're going, that's not going to help you. That's not going to help your scorecard, mate. You know what I mean? But it goes ex-dividend next month as well for a little tiny little dividend of 7.5 pence per share. So that's one of mine. Go back to you, Alex, for one more, if you've got one.
Yeah, I mean, very, very, very quickly. It was a talking stock today. I won't talk about it too much, but CNS, Carrero Network. CNS. About 40 million market cap. Had a blinding RNS out about a few days ago saying that they'd signed a partnership arrangement with Akamai, which is a big play on the sort of Internet of Things space. And Carrero, it's a tiddler, but it is profitable. They are net cash. It had a good move today. And what they do, for those who don't know, it's the cyber market. It's called DDoS within the cyber market. And they have one particular solution, which is called the Smart Wall product, which they license either themselves or through vendors for people who are basically, you know, it's the classic cyber story. Everybody's worried about ransomware and the threat to business continuity from cyber hacking. But what particularly sort of stood out to me was that, you know, Akamai is a massive company in the US, multi-billion dollar business. They would not give the say-so unless the relationship was on firm footing and meant something. So it's a $20 million business. Recurring revenue would be about three quarters of that, so $15 million. It is profitable. As the business scales, the EBITDA margins can probably increase to the mid-teens, high teens. At the moment, they're about 6 or 7%. So it's a sort of subscale UK software business. Big US footprint, and they're winning some decent contracts, and they're in a growing market. Very good friend of mine, Simon Strong, knows the company even better than me, and he thinks now's the right time. And there was a good market in it today. So CNS Carrero, as I say, a small cap, so be aware of that. Not the most liquid market at the moment. But they're doing the right things, and the market historically has placed quite a high value on recurring revenue, ARR, and that seems to have just vanished for the time being. But I do think in due course the market will come back to valuing ARR as a sort of annuity revenue stream, which is the reason why people got invested in software in the first place. It's sort of fallen out of bed a bit in the last 9 months. Carrero, CNS.
Thank you for that. I spotted that yesterday. What I do most mornings I put out a little bullish list of companies that have got positive data regarding their half year and the full year and contract wins, and it's had quite a few this year. The RNS came out yesterday and the market went up a little bit. Today it popped exponentially, and I'm going, well, why is that? And then somebody asked me about it in DMs this afternoon about it, and I said I don't own the stock. I just put out the bullish notes. You know, some days you get four or five, six companies that are up plus 20%. I think there's some 50s, some 40s, and some 30s today that came out that I triggered this morning. So yeah, any positive sort of news, I try and whittle out about a dozen of them each morning around 8 o'clock-ish or before the market's open to say, look, these look positive. So for the traders out there and those that want to just have a little synopsis of stocks that might be doing well, you can have a look at that every morning or every trading day going forward from myself. Henry, can we condense this one? Because I'm conscious of the time, your second pick for us. But CNS, I will keep an eye on that one because I like my little tiddlers that are actually profitable, of which they are getting fewer and fewer, Alex. So I'll keep an eye on that one, mate. It's good call. What have you got, Henry?
So my second pick is a UK specialist subcontractor and the world's largest geotechnical specialist. It was established in 1860 and it's called Keller Group. The ticker is KLR. It is a specialist geotechnical contractor operating around the world, and they basically provide solutions in ground improvement. So for those of you that don't know the construction industry, this is doing things like improving the load-bearing capacity of earthworks, containing large earthworks, doing excavations, excavation support, stabilizing slopes, that sort of thing. As a sector, I'm not overly keen on contracting, but the specialists, especially the leading specialists in the world, like Keller, can be quite attractive. Geotechnical solutions is a very specialist market. It's not something that everybody can do. And Keller has operating margins of about 5% compared to less than 1% for the typical contractor. So they're definitely able to charge a bit of a premium for their expertise. The total market for geotechnical works is estimated at about 38 billion compared to Keller's 2023 revenue of about 3 billion. So there's plenty of room for them to grow. The company is available on a forecast PE of about 6. It's got a dividend yield of 5.9%, which is covered 1.6 times and has 28 years of uninterrupted payments stretching back to 1994.
Cool. I like that one. I've always been a bit concerned by them because they are a contractor. The margins used to be quite wafer thin, Henry. And also they were carrying a little bit of debt historically. How has that balance sheet got better margin-wise and debt-wise over recent years?
The margins have improved slightly, but they are very, very thin. Construction, you're never going to get double-digit margins in construction for long. And they are on net debt of 300 million. Now, that's about a 10% debt-to-revenue ratio. Holders or researchers probably want to go and do a little bit of digging into what maturity profile that's got, whether it's floating, whether it's fixed, how much cash they've got on the balance sheet. Be careful with it because they wouldn't be the first company to get into trouble with debt in that sector. I'm thinking particularly of Carillion, which gave me a bloody nose many years ago.
Yeah, everyone remembers that punch, mate. I think lots of people had that punch. And talking about the that sort of space, I think a lot of people got punched again today. A couple of days back or yesterday, we had, I think we had Bellway, get the right way, Bellway. Then today we've had Barratt, and all of the builders have been spanked. And basically they're coming out saying we're still struggling because Help to Buy has been removed. And also interest rates are causing people to say we're not going to take out a new property, et cetera, et cetera. So lots of those builders got hit today. Both of them, Barratt and Bellway, down 5% today. Persimmon, as I said, was going to struggle for a little while. And I did say a good while ago that its share price was going to go sub £10. It finished down 6% today at £9.97. I suspect it could go lower at some point. It's going to be a great share to buy. But as yet, regarding the builders, I still think it's time to just take a step back and find other ways of possibly playing the construction market. I want to talk very, very briefly, because I'm conscious we've been here for a little while, about a stock that I previously held. I don't currently hold. I try not to talk about stocks I hold here. But book publisher, Bloomsbury Publishing, ticker symbol BMY, market cap £321 million, PE 15.9, yield 2.97, price range 365 to a high of 492, currently sitting at £3.95 at the lower end of its 52-week price chart. And what triggered me to talk about this was the fact that it's notched up another Nobel Prize. Yeah, people. Nobel Prize for Literature was won by the Norwegian playwright John Foss. And they've had significant number of imprint authors and so on and so forth that have won prizes within their business in the past. But it's more, obviously, if everyone knows that it's for the Harry Potter series that it's more famous for. But the reason I'm talking about it, I'm going to talk about this very, very briefly, is the fact that they came out with record sales back in early in the year, it paid an increased dividend of 10%. And we're going through a cost of living crisis, and people who used to buy very, very expensive gifts, the other part of the family that can't afford expensive gifts, and other people that are going down the gifts list, going to start buying more books. People are actually going to start buying more books and gifting books as a gift. So I think it could be a good time to have a little sniff around Bloomsbury towards its 52 weeks lows. And if they're going to have a good 3 months, 6 months, it's going to be betwixt now, Christmas and the new year, when they come out with saying, oh, this is how we did over Christmas. And if people are going to choose between buying an expensive gift and getting a stocking filler, why not buy a book? Yeah, so not going to say much more about it. I think it's a very interesting stock. You all know about the stock anyway, so I don't need to go into much details about it. Anybody asked me if they've got cash. Yes, they've got cash, 51.5 million the last count. So it's a good stock, British stock. Don't want it to get taken over. It's one of them stocks I'm going to keep an eye on. I might have a little snip at it at some point, but that for me is a very interesting stock that's currently semi-unloved that I think could be worth further investigation. I didn't say this last time, and I've got to say it this time, so I'm going to be very, very quick. I want to thank our most recent individuals that donated to the Memphis charity fundraise. And if you haven't done so yet, please do so, because we're going to be needing some monies for Christmas. We're at 2,460 right now. We need, if we possibly can, folks, between now and Crimbo, get that to £3,000. If you can help us out with that. And we had a donation from Random Walker, who just said, jolly good show, and donated £10. And Matthew with a single T, Gregory, who donated £25 and £6 gift aid. And he said, great listening to you, good folks. Love the fact that you walk the walk when it comes to kindness. And yes, I do still have hair. Who's he thinking about here? Who said what about hair? He's looking at me. Anyway, Matthew with a single T, thank you ever so much for your donation. And thank you, Random Walker Trader. That's me done. We've done an hour. Anybody wants to do any closing synopsis of what they want and what they're thinking? Alex, go.
Let's be honest. We want things to calm down a bit overseas in terms of the Middle East.
We do.
That's a horrible. What's going on at the moment is pretty horrible. So we want an end to all that. And aside from that, I think we want signs of inflation coming down. We want the signs of rates having peaked, and then we want cuts. That's what gets the market going. And we want an end to the UK being raided for its best companies. I think all these things are interlinked. That's what we want. And we also want the kids to have something to do over half term. That's the other
way. Yes. I'll send you a list of the films my daughter's watching. How old's your eldest, by the way? How old's your eldest?
16, 17.
Yeah. Right. So yeah, mine's nearly there. Okay. Yeah. Henry, any closing thoughts?
Well, I'm going to come out with a bit of a random one. On the off chance that there is anybody that can do anything about this, listening to the podcast, or someone that knows someone that can do something about this on the podcast, I read a really interesting article the other day. There's lots of talk in the press at the moment about how to get more people investing in the UK stock market and how to encourage equity valuations in the UK. And one that caught my eye was changing the profile of stamp duty and capital gains taxes by holding period. So the idea being that you don't charge it when you buy it, you charge it when you sell it. And that you give a discount the longer the share has been held. Now, I'm sure it's not as simple as that, and I'm sure there's lots of complexities around it, but I'd really like to see some smart thinking from our government next month on just how we could sensibly encourage equity valuations in the UK and more money going into the UK market, as opposed to just forcing people into it. I don't want to see the government saying, 20% of your ISA allowance has to be invested in the UK. End of conversation. Don't think that would be very, very productive. But encouraging some long-term patient capital type behaviours and giving some mild breaks for that, I'd stand behind that. So on the off chance anyone's listening and can, get it in there, I'd be very grateful.
I'll be having you on CNBC with Alex, mate, talking about it very soon. So, they'll
It's
probably
a
give you a
matter of
call at any
time.
point. Yeah, a matter of time. Yeah, coming on the show. On that note, there are two interviews to have a look at, and I'll be talking about some of those topics as well, Henry. And that's Holly McKay, who is award-winning investment and finance expert on the Investing Matters, just gone out today. And previously, Keith Hiscox, who's a CEO and founder of Not the founder, CEO of Hardman and Co. Research, both brilliant interviews to look at. And they all look at the long-term implications for investing and opportunities around pensions, also tracker funds, sustainable investing, and so on and so forth. And deep research, how to do quality research and find good long-term picks. So those are two interviews to find regarding myself that I've done via Investing Matters. I want to thank you all for coming back to listen to this 112th podcast. And thank you all for your continued support and feedback. We're going to be looking for some Twin Peaks ambassadors going forward, because we're going to have an event potentially. We're talking about it now. We may do one at Christmas. So if you've got some feedback and you're a regular listener, please retweet the podcast and give us some feedback. And we're going to choose some individuals from those that retweeted, giving us consistent feedback, to come onto the show live and maybe do something special in the month of December. So let's hear from you all. All right. Ladies and gents, take care, stay safe, stay blessed. Bye for now.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.